Last Saturday, I opened the Express News and the San Antonio Life of the Express News, and there's a columnist. I don't always read him. His name is Michael O'Rourke. How many of you ever read Michael O'Rourke in the... Well, my wife does. That makes two of us. All right. Well, Michael, Michael writes a kind of a slice of life column, and he often talks about his wife and his three girls in the column. But the thing that drew my attention last week was the headline, which said this: "The smell of bacon is its own reward." Well, you know what? As soon as I saw that, I said, I have got to read this. And he starts out like this. I love this. "Living in a house with four women, I am constantly barraged by pleasant scents. My home sometimes smells like a Bath and Body Works waged a fragrance war with a Crabtree and Evelyn, with heavy casualties on both sides. Lotions, gels, perfumes, soaps, shampoos, body butters, and potpourri with names like Sweet Pea, Midnight Breeze, and Autumnal Bluster can sometimes pleasantly overwhelm the senses." In fact, he says, and this is what caught me, in fact, he said, "The only time the house even smells remotely like a dude might live there, too, is Sunday morning. That's when the feminine aroma that is my world is replaced with the manly, briny fragrance that is bacon." He says, "Is there any better house smell than the one that accompanies sliced strips of swine belly crackling and dancing in a hot pan?" To which my inner spirit said, "No! There is no better smell than that." And then he went on to say, "Thin sliced, thick cut, maple or hickory smoked, or just plain old bacon, it doesn't matter. All bacon is good bacon. I'm not brand loyal either. I simply go with whatever's on sale. The cheapest bacon will always beat the most expensive Brussels sprouts. It is a culinary fact." He said, "Raw bacon is like seeing a supermodel first thing in the morning without any makeup. It may not seem appetizing at first, but just wait a little bit and your patience will be well rewarded." You can see why I like this, right? And then he goes on to say, "The smell fills the house and awakens my pink bathrobe-wearing housemates. As they shuffle out from their rooms in their fluffy pink slippers, they all greet me exactly the same way. Mmm, bacon." Now, if just the thought of bacon frying sets your taste buds on edge as they do mine, then imagine how Daniel and his three friends must have felt when dinner is served and all of the king's finest is set before them at the Royal Academy in the 3-year course of study that they've been forcibly placed under in Babylon. And all of those aromas coming, all of those aromas coming to them, I'm imagining the scene. You know, you're in the dining hall, and, you know, the king's finest is being served. The finest steak, grilled perfectly. All those aromas must have been amazing as the food was brought in to serve these young people. And yet Daniel and his three friends, they have my undying admiration. Because anybody who could turn away from a juicy, sizzling steak for a bowl of cereal has my admiration. Because that's pretty much what they did. Because of their commitment to God, because of their love for God, because of their not wanting to disappoint God, because of their wanting to live under the law, they had to turn down the finest food available to keep their commitment to God. Now, in a moment, we'll see why that is and why they turned down the king's food and the king's drink. Remember, we were told last week that they were chosen in the early part of this passage, the first 7 verses, we were told that they were chosen, especially these four, along with many others, chosen out of the Hebrew exiles because of their good looks and because of their intelligence. They were. By the way, it's an interesting thing. In the ancient world, good looks went along with intelligence. That's the way it was in the ancient world. That's why the scripture mentions that they were handsome as well as intelligent. In the ancient world, those were thought to go together. And They're chosen, and they were young men, verse 4 tells us, without any physical defect. They were handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning. They were well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. So they're taken out of the other exiles. And there were other Hebrews, but we only know about four. And the question for us is, are these the only four who stood up for God? Are these the only four out of the whole group who stood up for God? And we read about Daniel and what are his friends' names? Okay, who's the other one? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's their Hebrew names. We remember them by their Babylonian names, which are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Many of you know our friend Jack Lloyd, a member of our church. And last week, after the first service, he came to me and he said, when I was a kid, they gathered up all our kids, all us kids at church because we had a visiting preacher. And the visiting preacher said to us, now I'm going to teach you something that your parents don't know, but I'm going to be teaching on it later in the service. So I want you to remember this. And he taught them, shake a bed, make a bed, and in the bed you go. And Jack has never forgotten that. Shake a bed, make a bed, and in the bed you go. Okay, that's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We should really remember them by their Hebrew names, but I got to tell you, even I have to think twice. I mean, it rolls off the tongue, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It does not roll off the tongue to say Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, right? But Daniel and his four buddies are selected to be trained in this three-year course of study. Now, verse 8. Houston, we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. Daniel resolved not to defile himself. Now, before we get into the new material for this morning, I want to ask you to use your sermon outline or your bulletin, whatever you have in front of you, and I want you to finish this statement. Okay? I want you to finish this statement. I will be a success in life if. I will be a success in life if. I want you to finish that statement. All right, let's dive into the material. Daniel resolved, verse 8 tells us, not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And so he asked the chief official for permission to not defile himself this way. Now, let's understand the situation here. I like the way one writer expressed it. At the very beginning of their career in a three-year program, the young Yahweh worshipers were faced with a clear-cut issue of obedience and faith. They were doubtless subjected to intense social pressure from their classmates and teachers to do what everyone else was doing. They might have argued with themselves about the apparent folly of letting a ceremonial quibble destroy their chances of attaining high positions in government. In other words, God calls them, and these are just teenage boys. We think they were anywhere from 14 to about 17 years old at the time Daniel 1 occurs. And they're just teenage boys, and they're called to make a decision. They're called to make a clear-cut decision of obedience and faith. Now, you can imagine what went through their minds. What are we supposed to do? And you can imagine that the peer pressure would have been great because we, as we understand it, even out of all the Hebrews who were in this three-year school, these four were the only ones to stand up. The peer pressure would have been unbelievable. You know, the world's wisdom says, don't rock the boat. Go along to get along. You ever been told that? Ever thought that in your life? Don't rock the boat. Go along to get along. Don't offend anyone. Particularly by your commitment to the Bible or your commitment to God or your commitment to righteousness. Don't offend anybody. Try to please everybody. You know, that's the highest value in our society today, trying to please everybody. Or close to it if it isn't. But Daniel and his friends took the path that you and I ought to take when faced with a dilemma. They were more concerned with pleasing God than pleasing men. they were more concerned with pleasing God than pleasing men. To do that, we have to, at some point in our lives, I think as young people like Daniel and his friends, and if not then, surely sometime early in our lives, we need to start to define our priorities and determine that whatever happens in our lives, we're going to trust God. We're going to trust God. And when we make that decision, let me tell you what's going to happen. The same thing's going to happen in our lives as happened to Daniel and his three friends, and that is that we will be prepared for future greatness. Prepared for future greatness. This is amazing to me. Think about the situation here with Daniel and his friends. They're away from home. They have been taken from hundreds of miles in exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. No parental influence. They're away from home and the influence of their parents. We call that college. They refuse to take advantage of the lack of parental supervision. Is that amazing? They refuse to take advantage of the lack of parental supervision. They're not sorry for themselves. We don't catch any sense of them being sorry for themselves or blaming others or complaining about their situation. We find them standing up for God. We find them saying, God, make me count. God, make me count. Make my life count. One writer said this, Daniel's parents could not possibly have anticipated the perils their son would encounter in Babylonia. But they would have been proud of his wise response in translating his faith into daily decisions. I can't even imagine what it was like for his parents to have Daniel ripped from their home, taken hundreds of miles away from their influence, away from their desires, away from their hopes for him. And yet that's what happened to Daniel and the others. And in the midst of that, they made a great choice. They made a great choice. When they could have just gone along with everybody around them, they could have said, who's going to know anyhow? They made a choice to stand up. A choice that could have been immensely costly in their lives and their careers. And some of you have been faced with a choice like that in your past, or will be faced with one in the future. Maybe the near future. Are you going to resolve in your heart, as Daniel and his friends did, to put the Lord first, to determine to do what the Lord wants you to do? Or are you going to go along? Daniel's parents could not have anticipated the perils their son would face. But you know what I think they did? I don't think that the kind of courage that came into Daniel's life or the lives of his friends, the kind of decision-making, I don't think that happens by mistake or by accident. I don't think that one day Daniel just said, well, now I'm on my own. I better walk with the Lord. Do you believe that happened? I think his parents, from the time he was a child, must have built into him the desire to follow the Lord, built into him the desire to walk with the Lord. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand that Daniel, as a child, like every other child, has a sin nature. Your child has a sin nature. You know that, right? My children have sin natures. If you hear this tape, Tim and Andy, I'm sorry, but you do. You have sin natures. I have a sin nature. Every person born, save for Jesus Christ, has a sin nature, and for Adam and Eve, who gained a sin nature by their disobedience to God. I understand that, but along the way, they were able to train Daniel and his three friends' parents were able to train them so that when they got into a situation, they had built into them self-control. That's our whole job, folks, as parents, is to build self-control into our children's lives, to help them to reach the point in their lives where they make good decisions when we're not around. You see, that's what happens to so many kids. You hear the proverbial story about a Christian kid who goes off to college and goes berserk. gets into everything. Sex, drugs, alcohol, gets into it all. And it's almost become a proverb. Well, somewhere along the way, and I understand there are lots of factors, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but somewhere along the way, their parents didn't prepare them. Somewhere along the way, they weren't given small decisions to make. You see, this is something that goes through life. From the time our children are small, as they get older and older and older, the older they get, the more responsibility we should be giving them. The older they get, the more self-control they should be showing. Now, we can't expect a 2-year-old to show the control that a 13-year-old should show. And it's true all throughout the ages of our children. But our goal should be to teach them the Bible, to teach them good living habits, to teach them morality, and to try to give them decisions along the way that will help them to learn how to make decisions until they're at the point when they're about to leave our homes, when they're already taking control of a lot of their lives and they're already making good decisions, so that when they get to college, that's going to stand them in good stead. Or then they leave our home for whatever reason. Maybe they're done with high school and they move on, and college isn't in their future and it isn't in everybody's future. And so they move on to the next stage of their lives. But they've been prepared. Some parents believe that it's rule after rule after rule after rule, and it doesn't matter what age their child is, it's the rule. Now, that doesn't mean our children don't have rules. But if we're enforcing the same rules at 13 or 14 or 15 that we were enforcing at 7 or 8 or 9, something's the matter. Something's wrong. Daniel's parents couldn't have anticipated what would happen to him, and yet they must have made wise choices in their lives that helped Daniel. That helped Daniel. Now, one other thing I want to see here, and I think this is an important point. And I don't know what to make out of it, to be honest with you. I've thought of this before and studied this before. How many Bible characters can you think of that God took out of a godly home and put them into a pagan situation and allowed them to be trained in pagan education? Can you think of any? Moses. Moses was taken out of a Hebrew home. Now, he was allowed to be raised to a certain point by his own mother because of God arranging that, but then he was trained up in all the wisdom and knowledge of Egypt. Can you think of another one? Joseph. Joseph is a great example. Taken out of a wonderful Israelite, well, I don't know if it's so wonderful, but anyhow, it was an Israelite home, and he is carted off to Egypt. I think of Samuel. Even though Samuel wasn't taken into a pagan culture, the way Eli's sons lived, they might as well have been pagans. Can you imagine taking your child at 2 or 3 years old, whom you have prayed for years and years and years, and handing your child over to Eli, the high priest? And that was okay. Hannah promised God she'd do that. But there are those sons of Eli that God had to judge. So immoral that God said to Eli, why didn't you ever ask them, why are you living the way you do? God sometimes allows children to be taught in a situation that has heathen or pagan values. Now, I don't know what to make of that, except to say this, that you're going to have some choices as parents as to what to do with training your children. And what I believe and what I have seen in our lives in raising our 2 sons, and I'm not saying, we made our mistakes, You'll make your mistakes if you haven't already. But you got to make a choice. What am I going to do? How am I going to educate them? And sometimes I think we become simplistic in our thinking about the education of our children. Well, we'll never send them to public school. I don't know. It looks like God put Joseph and Daniel and Eli in a pretty bad public school situation. Not Eli, Samuel. You'll have to decide, is that what I want to do? Is that what's right before God for me to do? That's the only question that's important. It's not what Joe thinks. It's not what the people around you think. It's what does God think you should do for your children? And if you ask him, he'll tell you. So it may be a public school choice. It may be a private school choice. It may be a choice to homeschool your children. Those are all good choices. And in my way of seeing passages like this, they're all equal choices. Now I made some of you mad. I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to say that God has different ways to deal with different people. And your choice may be public school, and that is great if it's before God. Your choice may be private school, and that is great if it's before God. Your choice may be homeschool, and that is great if that's the choice that God has directed you to make. And I support all those choices. Every one of them. Because, again, the question isn't what I think of it about it. The question is, what does God think about it? What does God want you to do? Now, let me ask a couple of things, though, for all of our parents. Whatever the choice you make to educate your children, public, private, home, please respect other parents' choices. Please respect other parents' choices. Secondly, please teach your children to respect other children whose parents made different choices for them. I think that's just basic Christian love, isn't it? Okay, I don't know what to make of this, but I know that Daniel and his friends are placed in this situation. They resolve, verse 8 tells us, not to eat the food, the royal food and the wine that is placed before them. Now, why is that? Let me read a little further here. So he asked the chief official, apparently Daniel is the ringleader, so to speak, for permission not to defile himself this way. Now, why did he consider it defiling to eat the king's food and wine? Now, let me read a little further. He considered it defiling to eat the king's food and wine. Verse 9, now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables. By the way, that word in Hebrew means not just garden vegetables, it means grains. Grains. Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. Now, is there something inherently wrong with meat? Is that the problem here? Is that why Daniel says, I don't want to defile myself with the king's meat and the king's wine? Is that what the problem is here? No, it's not the issue of eating meat or not eating meat. This is not a vegan or vegetarian passage. Okay? What's the problem for Daniel and his friends? The problem was they didn't want to be ceremonially defiled by eating things God said not to eat. You can look those up and read Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14, that they contain some of the food rules. What was the problem with this food? Because meats were allowed under the law. Certain meats were not. What is the problem? Why are they saying, I don't want to defile myself? Well, I think there are three reasons. Number one, the food that they would eat would be prepared by Gentiles. The food that they would eat, whatever the meat, would be prepared by Gentiles. Secondly, in all likelihood, all of the food and all of the wine, the drink that they would be given, would have been sacrificed to false gods. That's why they were afraid about defilement. Number one, it would be prepared by Gentiles. Number two, it would be sacrificed. That would be the fruit of sacrifices to a pagan god. And number three, some of the things were forbidden by the law. Now, meat was allowed in the law, but some of the meat that they might be served, some of the fowl, some of the fish that they might be served from the king's table would defile them, make them ceremonially unclean. So the issue for them is, I want to be obedient to God. The issue wasn't health. The issue wasn't, this is a better diet for me. The issue was, I want to be obedient to God. That was the issue before them. The food that they would be served would not be inherently unclean. But it would have been prepared by Gentiles, no doubt sacrificed to pagan gods, some of it forbidden by the law. And that's why Daniel had a problem with it. That's why Daniel had a problem with the food. So you notice he resolved, it says. He resolved. He made a resolution. He decided. Some of your translations say he purposed in his heart. Daniel took a look at this and he said, there are things in my life that I want and there are things in my life that I don't want. And what I'm going to do, the deciding factor, the priority of my life is going to be, what does God want for me? What does God want for me? So he resolved not to defile himself. Now that could have been dangerous to he and his friends in numerous ways. It certainly could have put an end to any future career. They were being trained to serve in government, probably high posts in government, and this decision on his part could have put an end to that. But he decided anyhow that he would resolve to follow the Lord. It could have been worse for him. After all, he is a captive in a pagan land, and you're saying, no, I won't do what you want me to do. Oh, really? So this wasn't just an easy decision. This was fraught with danger to Daniel and these three friends of his. The bottom line is they refused to do that which displeased God. Now, I think that in our day and age, we need to make some decisions about not defiling ourselves with the things that our culture says is okay. Especially our young people. I hope you'll refuse to defile yourself sexually. I hope you'll refuse to defile yourself sexually. I hope you'll have a standard and know the limits in your life. Refuse to do it just because the world is doing it. Refuse to follow the model of the world. The model of the world is, well, if you love the other person, you should have sex. It's all over your television, all over the movies. If you love each other, you have sex. That's what's next. Do you know what the Bible says? If you love each other, the next thing is this, a wedding ring. That's what's next. Some of us need to make the decision that we won't defile ourselves sexually, our young people especially. We won't defile ourselves with alcohol or drugs. We won't defile ourselves with materialism. Deuteronomy 8:3, man does not live by bread alone. They resolved to do what the Lord called them to do. They'd resolved not to defile themselves. And so they proposed a test. Now, I like the way Daniel proposed the test. Do you notice how he did it? he took a very sensible approach. He wasn't arrogant. He wasn't prideful. He didn't say, "You don't understand. I am a Hebrew. That ought to mean something to you here in Babylon." Well, that's how sometimes we Christians come across to other people. Daniel never did that. His friends didn't do that. What did he do? He humbly and respectfully went to the person in charge whom God, and I don't have time to do this, but I want you to sometime today, not in the next 7 minutes, look at God's hand in chapter 1 of Daniel. You see God's hand all over chapter 1 of Daniel. Respectfully and humbly, Daniel goes to the guard over them and the guy in charge and says, "Please, please don't make us defile ourselves with this food." And he proposes a test, a very sensible test. And the request, I believe, is granted for two reasons. One is the way he approached it by coming to the guard and to the man over the Royal Academy in the way he did, his respectfulness, his humbleness. But obviously, secondly, God's hand is in this, right? The sovereignty of God. And he proposes this test, and that is to eat vegetables, which would include grains. There were no unclean vegetables, by the way. That's why vegetables would be important. There were no unclean vegetables. The diet would include grains as well. One writer said it would be a really limited diet. And in point of fact, that kind of diet should have never had the response that it did. It should never have turned out to be so much better for these four than for all of the others who were eating a full diet. This was a limited diet. So the test was agreed to. Verse 15 says, at the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. I want us to be clear about something in this passage. It wasn't the food. It wasn't the food. It was what God did for them because of their obedience to Him and their commitment to Him. I want to ask a question. How do you respond to the roadblocks in your life? How do you respond to the roadblocks in your life? For you, for young people, what do you do when your parents say no? That's how some kids respond when their parents say no. How do you respond to the roadblocks in your life? As I mentioned earlier, what Daniel didn't do was pout or complain. Or say, "Woe is me," or "Why did God allow this in my life?" What he did do when he encountered a roadblock was he responded with humility and courtesy and respectfulness, and he came up with a reasonable alternative. That's what we need to be training our kids to do. When you hit a roadblock in school, your teacher just... What do you do? You do what Daniel did. You respond with respect, you respond with courtesy, and you come up with a reasonable alternative. That's how Daniel responded to a roadblock in his life. Well, verse 17 tells us this: to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds, and that's going to really come in handy in the rest of the book. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. As one writer put it, Daniel and his friends were granted special wisdom by the Lord, not because of their diet, but because of his approval of their faith and commitment to his word. That's why they were successful, not only in this test, not only in this 3-year school, but you follow their lives and you find out they're successful in life. Why are they successful in life? Not because of what they eat, but because of their faith and commitment to God. That's what made them successful in life. We read in verse 21, and Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Daniel served anywhere, and it depends on how you understand the dates, but he served anywhere from 65 to 75 years. In fact, he served the entire time of the Hebrew exile and was not one of those who went back to Jerusalem when Cyrus allowed them to. But you know what? God had him there when Cyrus made the decision to send the Hebrews back to Jerusalem and back to their land. Daniel was so successful that he held high government posts, positions of power and authority under 4 different rulers in 3 different kingdoms. And where did it start? In a decision to follow the Lord and not the crowd. In a decision to commit to the Lord and not to defile himself with the things of the world. So many of us think that the road to success today is through learning. The road to success today is through money. The road to success today is through sports. The road to success today is through connections, the right connections. And that's not it. The road to success today for our children, for our young people, for each one of us, the road to success is the same road that Daniel took, and that is the road of commitment to the Lord, whatever the cost. The road of commitment to the Lord, whatever the cost. I asked a question at the beginning of the sermon, and that question was, or I asked you to finish a statement, I will be a success if. I'm wondering now what you wrote. I don't want you to tell me. That's between you and God. By now, I hope that you've seen that I believe the right answer to that is I will be a success is if I commit myself to God in His way. I will be a success if I commit myself to God in His way. Not if I finish pilot training successfully. Not if I get through the Border Patrol Academy successfully. Not if I finish my college career successfully. Not if I make a lot of money, have a lot of things, I will be a success if, and I think the answer, according to Daniel, is if I've committed myself first to Him and foremost to Him and make all my decisions based on that commitment. That's what we need to hear. That's what our kids need to hear. Let's bow together in prayer. Father, thank you. Thank you for Daniel's example and his 3 friends. Thank you that they committed themselves to you first. And though that commitment could have gone wrong and could have taken them into dangerous places and into conflict with powerful people, nonetheless, they purposed in their hearts to follow you and to not do that which would defile them. Help us to be Daniels. Hananiah, Mishael's, Azariah's, in committing ourselves first to you. And thank you that when we do that, you will use us in ways we cannot even imagine. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.